This podcast is brought to you by St. Joseph's Episcopal Church in Boynton Beach, Florida, in the United States of America. You can find us at stjoesweb.org. Come visit us when you are in town.
So shine before us, O Lord, that it may bring us to a deeper knowledge of you, our only God. Amen. This morning, as I always do, I bring you greetings from our fellow Episcopalians in nearly 100 congregations, schools, and special ministries from Jensen Beach in the north to Key West in the south. We speak many languages, we embody many cultures, and we come from many countries. But as we declared at the beginning of this service, we are united in one Lord, one faith, and one baptism. This morning, I bring you also greetings from our fellow Anglicans in the Church of the Bahamas, who continue to face extraordinary difficulties in the wake of Hurricane Dorian, which struck the Bahamas just 3 months ago. The bishop and the community there are so grateful for our prayers and our ongoing support. As you know, we've been having an appeal, and I want to give you just a brief update. Right after the hurricane, we launched an appeal for $50,000, which we thought was a good enough sum, and we could get that immediately to the bishop for the urgent needs that we knew that he would have in the days right after the hurricane. We reached that goal in the first day of the appeal. Ah, but it gets better. Yes, you can applaud. Yeah, you can applaud. That's fine. But it gets better, and you're a crucial part of that. So you're going to give yourselves a round of applause in a minute. But I'll take all the enthusiasm I can get. Since then, this appeal has grown beyond anyone's dreams. And to date, we have raised about $850,000. And now you can applaud. That's it. It is, I think, a record appeal in our diocese. And most of this money has been raised by us here in our congregations, our schools, and our special ministries. But I do have to say that others from across the country and around the world have joined us in this appeal, other bishops, other dioceses, as well as some non-religious groups and foundations. So most of all this morning, as I begin my three-hour sermon. I hope you'll all be laughing at 2 o'clock when I'm done. Most of all this morning, I want to thank you here at St. Joseph's for the part you have played in raising this money. You as a parish have been very generous to this appeal, and I'm grateful to all of you for doing this. So please give yourselves a round of applause for your contribution to this. We could not have reached this goal without you and without all of our brothers and sisters in this diocese. The money that we have raised will be used in consultation over time with the Bishop of the Bahamas and in collaboration with Food for the Poor and Episcopal Relief and Development to enable the bishop and the diocese to rebuild destroyed and damaged church buildings, but also to reach beyond the church itself to the wider community in which the 9 parishes are set. And to enable the church to resume its active ministry in Abaco and Grand Bahama. Our job is to support them in any way that we can, and this money will enable us to do this. And this evening, in fact, I go from here with you to the airport because I'm going to Nassau tonight, and tomorrow I'll be in Abaco, and on Tuesday I'll be in Grand Bahama for the first time in those parts of the country since the hurricane on a pastoral visit to spend some time with the clergy and the communities there and to see for myself exactly how things are going, which I understand is still grim. The pictures are off our papers now and off our news, but the situation is still dire. We've also just launched a further appeal, which I hope that you have all seen because it was sent to everyone in the diocese. And in this appeal, we're appealing for partnerships, expertise, and mission trips. I know how committed you are here at St. Joseph's to mission trips, and I hope very much that you will consider going to the Bahamas, not once, but several times over the next 3 to 5 years, for this is the time frame that we're looking at in order to give the kind of consistent help to them that we hope we can do. So thank you. Thank you for all your commitment. Thank you for all that you do here, particularly to reach out beyond your walls. Thank you for what you have been helping us do for the Bahamas and what I know you will continue to do. I'm delighted to be back with you at St. Joseph's. Kate is sorry not to be with us this morning. She's been battling the flu or something like it, and so she is recovering over the weekend, and it's best for you and for me that she isn't here. She would be keeping beat during the music with her regular coughing. But she does send her prayers and her best wishes. I also, since this is my first time here, since your rector has returned from sabbatical, I want to welcome Father Marty back from his sabbatical, and Dee as well. I did ask when I was with the candidates before church how you ate while he was gone, but I was assured that food continued to be provided even in the rector's absence. So it's good to have them home, and he told me a little bit about the trips that they took, and it sounded absolutely wonderful. Welcome back, Marty. And I want also to thank Wendy and all of those who helped keep the ministry going here, not really keeping the ministry going here, who continued to enable this congregation to flourish. So thank you, Wendy, and all of those who helped you. And everybody, I mean, you all know who you are, the vestry, all of those, the wardens, all the lay ministry here that is so active and important. So thank you for all of that. It's all a sign. When I was a rector, I didn't like to admit it, but in fact, the place usually goes along quite well when we're not there. And we, all of us who are clergy, have to come to a realization that we're none of us indispensable, but it's always nice to be home. And I want to congratulate all of those whom we are baptizing and confirming and receiving into the church today. This is a great day for all of you and for this community, and we're very glad to see you and all your families here. There are 4 generations of your family in this parish, so that's a wonderful, wonderful thing. This morning, on this Feast of Christ the King, this last Sunday of Pentecost, we keep this commemoration, this memory, this remembrance, this celebration of Christ as our King. Our church year ends this week with this solemn declaration of our faith, as the opening prayer at our Eucharist this morning articulated so well. God will restore all things in his beloved Son, the King of Kings and Lord of Lords. That's how we end the church's year, with this great celebration of the Feast of Christ the King, which, as it were, gathers together all that we have been celebrating for the last 12 months in one final and rather grand declaration of faith. And then next Sunday, on the first Sunday of Advent, we begin all over again. The new church year begins in a week with the remarkable and moving season of Advent, and we start again the pilgrimage of our salvation. The language that we use of Jesus as our King of Kings and Lord of Lords, which Handel made so memorable in the Messiah, and that is so much a part of the Christmas celebrations of most of us, is awfully lofty and can seem sometimes a little out of reach for some of us. After all, for most of us, kings and lords are either the stuff of fairy tales or pageants or bad news. We have no direct experience of kings and lords that might make the language about Jesus a little more accessible. And so often contemporary royalty can be surrounded by a complex public image that doesn't help. But however modern royalty may be faring at any given moment, this does not make it untrue to say that Jesus is King of Kings and Lord of Lords. It's simply that it can be a bit of a stretch, and it's going to demand something of us to feel this language in our hearts as we relate to Christ in our prayers. In our gospel reading this morning, however, the language of Jesus as a king takes on a very different kind of meaning, a very different sort of feel. And the dialogue of Jesus from the cross, in which he shows us the kind of king he is not only one of the most touching scenes in the whole of the Gospels, it shows us the kind of king that Jesus is. It's a terrible moment. Three men have been tortured and hung up on crosses and left to die. It could take days to die on the cross. And one died from suffocation and exhaustion because you had to pull yourself up to breathe, and eventually you couldn't do that anymore, and you simply died by suffocation. It's not surprising that one of them tries one last time to be saved from such a horrible death. Just as at the beginning of his public life in the wilderness, when Jesus was tempted, he is tempted again, not by the devil this time, but by a dying man who, it must be said, might have been thought to have had a greater call on Jesus' attention. But this time, unlike the wilderness 3 years before, Jesus has no need to rebuke the tempter. It is the third person on the cross who intervenes and who utters the words that have become one of the simplest and yet most heartfelt of all prayers. Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom. Christians have been reciting this prayer for so long, we do not know exactly when it entered into the worship of the church. But it has been firmly a part of our heritage of prayer that we see it all the time in the writings of the spiritual masters. Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom. Here, as we see Jesus on the cross, we see what kind of king he is. He is a king whose throne is a cross. And it is here that we see the full extent of love divine. In our conversation before the Eucharist this morning, one of the themes that we talked about was the importance of love, the centrality of love, both in terms of our relationship with God, but also in terms of our relationship with each other. And it is here in this scene that we see the full power of that love divine. Because on the cross, Jesus does what love does. First of all, what does he do? What's the first thing? They've strung him up. What does he say? You've got the crib notes. They're in front of you. You can even cheat. The first thing he does is forgive. So from the throne of the cross facing death, this unlikely king does the unlikeliest thing. He forgives and redefines kingship in a sentence. We don't normally associate forgiveness with royalty. We associate other things with royalty. But here, the first thing that the king does is forgive. And then he does something else. What does he do? What does he do? What does he do? Go on, you can look at your bulletin. He's talking to someone who asks him for something. What does the third man ask him? I've told you already in my sermon, Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom. I'd like you to memorize that prayer and use it. He says, Jesus, and what does Jesus do? He receives him, he embraces him, and promises him that that day he will be in paradise. So the second unlikely thing that this unlikely king does from the unlikely throne of the cross is to embrace someone who has been thrown away by the community of which he had been a part only a few hours before. He embraces someone who has been tortured and hung up to die. And a stranger, too. In all this, Jesus shows us a new kind of kingship. He shows us the lengths to which love divine will go for us. And he fulfills the fundamental calling of any king, which is to live for the sake of his people, even to the point of shedding his own blood. But here we also see, as Jesus does the best thing in the worst hour, that his kingship is meant to gather and not to exclude. For he welcomes the last as much as he welcomes the first. He welcomes the criminal into paradise, a destiny that he could never have hoped for. And in opening paradise to the criminal, Jesus opens it also to you and me, who also pray this prayer, Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom. As Advent begins next week and we turn our eyes once again towards Bethlehem, we could do worse than use the criminal's prayer for ourselves, for it really is the deepest longing of our hearts, and I commend it to you. You'll memorize it in no time. So in your daily prayers, take the bulletin home with you, and in your daily prayers, just read that one prayer. Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom. We shall have the good news of that kingdom again at Christmas as it bursts into our earthly existence with the birth of Jesus. For now, as we read again this morning the full extent of the love that God has for us, that love divine is willing to give up his last breath so that you and I might live, may the criminal's prayer be always on our lips. Jesus, remember me when you come into your kingdom. Amen.